What is up, everybody? For a limited time, JList is offering our listeners an exclusive coupon for their website, JList.com. By using the promo code JListSpirit20, you can get $20 off your order of $50 or more. But this is only for a limited time, and be advised that JList.com is not safe for work. It includes a variety of imports from Japan, including adult content. Check the description of this podcast for details and the coupon code. But with that said, we thank JList for offering us this coupon. We hope you guys enjoy it, and on with the show. The following is for mature audiences only. Audience discretion is advised. What's up, everybody? My name is Andrew. I'm with Otaku Spirit, and I'm joined here, as always, with my co-host, Chris.
Yo.
And today we have a special guest on the line right now, which is Peter from JList. Welcome, Peter, finally.
Hello.
Yeah, it's
been a long time coming.
Time to connect through the Twitter sphere and everything. Sorry.
Right. We kept like teasing it on our podcast and everything. So I'm sure about this point, everybody's going, so they're lying. They don't actually have an interview with Peter. But yeah, we wanted to get you on a long time ago. Chris was working something out, but things kind of fell through. I think more on our end, if anything. But that was our fault that time. This is your fault this time. But we really wanted to get you on here recently because obviously there's a lot of talk right now going on in the retail space around anime. So I figured, Definitely. Hey, what better person to talk about it than Peter Payne, right?
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, first things first, I do want to get everybody kind of caught up on who are you, Peter? We want to know who are you, first of all, before we get into JList, because we want you to talk about JList a little bit so that people know what you sell. But who are you?
Well, basically, I'm one of the first, you know, there's probably like first wave otaku, second wave otaku, like the really old guys who got into, you know, Atom Boy, which I've actually never seen. I grew up in the time when I was influenced by Jungle Taitei Leo, which is Kimo the White Lion, of course, Speed Racer, all of the tokusatsu films. And so I was just like, wow, Japan is the greatest place ever. And at 5 years old, so it was just
one of the original weebs.
Yeah. It was just like being called, like, wow, I love this. And then Star Blazers came along, and this was like, what? You have to watch the episodes in order because it's got like a story. And it ends and people die. Like, what? So I was just absolutely blown away. So really like Star Wars and then anime were these two giant things just banging on my head. And then I went to university and I took Japanese, and I thought, wow, this is really hard. I couldn't possibly learn hiragana. And it turned out that I had a good, I was able to learn Japanese pretty well. And I was like, well, this is fun. I'd taken 4 years of Japanese at that point. I'm like, well, I should go to Japan, shouldn't I? And I came to stay for a year or so. And of course, I liked it. And I met my wife and you know, things worked out really well there. And then when the internet happened, I was like, this is it. This is what my life has been waiting for. I've got to do something. And I was like, honey, I'm going to do something. And she's like, that's nice, dear, whatever. And so eventually I started a pre-business where like I would go to used CD stores, I would buy a bunch of CDs, I would stick them in an Excel file, I would spam Rec Arts Anime, which is like the very old, like the first version of Reddit, and people didn't like spam, but because they liked the stuff I was selling, like, oh, okay, Peter can do it, it's okay.
So then even back then, you were spamming a bunch of lewds. I get it. Okay.
Well, not lewds.
This is something that's been a long time going.
Eventually we got more arrow. But yeah, the name of the file was the Japan list, and that eventually got shortened to JList when we went full time with it. And then we just basically, I think so JList was probably the first shop located in Japan selling to people abroad. Whereas before you had Anime Nation in Florida, you had Right Stuff in Iowa, and there were so few companies, and they were not in any decent place to be an anime shop. I was like, why would you be in Florida on the farthest point you could be from America or from Japan? So it was a really good benefit for us. We had a long time where we could just figure out what we were doing, how to do a website, what kinds of products we sell. And then it was just a matter of sort of like, you know, going from explosion to explosion of popularity, like Pokemon came along and we just sold Pokemon plushes, and we would do conventions, and we were the only people with like legitimate Pokemon plushes. All the other people were selling like pirated ones from Taiwan. And so we were like, oh, you're the shop to go to if you want the actual decent licensed product. And we just sold figures and, you know, the Hello Kitty vibrator, which was a huge thing back in the day. We sold like 10,000 of those things. It was incredible.
I'm going to Google that later.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That is wild. So that's basically something where you're seeing something that's not being done and just kind of grabbing onto it.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, and the Japanese word is skima sangyo, where we look for a little crack somewhere and we go, right there, crack, and we jump into the crack and we sell it. And we, if like cosplay is popular this year, we grab some cosplay, we sell it, whatever we think we can sell. And then for like really long time fans of our company, and there's a lot of people who follow us for a long time, we've been around for 25 years, 26 this October. So our products have really evolved a lot over the years. And there was a time when, you know, we're an adult business, but people would not really see us as being an adult business because we had bento. Like we were like a major source of bento boxes around the world back in the bento boom in the early 2000s. Like there's a plush toy called the dog. It's like a plush toy that looks like it's being viewed through a zoom lens kind of thing. And that was right. Sort of like, we got that started. And then Nordstrom and McDonald's were like copying us years later.
Gosh.
Like,
you know, so that you're the one that came up with that.
Yeah, we were a trendsetter, at least that's my understanding. I don't know for sure, but we were the first ones to say, hey, look at this cool thing from Japan. And we sold, you know, thousands and thousands of them. And then it just got even bigger after that. So there's a lot of different products. Another one is Domokun. We didn't make Domokun popular, but we were the only place to buy Domokun because we were the only company in Japan who were able to get a contract with NHK. And so everybody had Domokun plushes they bought from us. And it was a pretty fun time. So over the years of that all those things sort of went away. Or if they like a, you know, something won't stay popular for 6 or 8 years like it did back in the early 2000s. It comes and it goes in 2 weeks. And so there's just not, it's a little bit different. There's so many people selling. Of course, there's a lot of competition, things like that. You got everything on Amazon. So things don't have the same popularity. And so on JList, a lot of customers will say, hey, you got, you know, a lot more adult products than you did comparatively. We still sell a lot of other things, but we have to say, yeah, we apologize for that because that's just how the market has gone. It's how sort of where our competition is or isn't. We used to sell a lot of Japanese snacks, and it was like, hey, I'll go buy some snacks from JList. But right now in Corona, with the shipping is really high, of course, you don't want to pay $40 for 6 boxes of Pocky probably. So, yeah. And you can probably get it from your local store. So it's just been a slow evolution of everything that we've sold has sort of, you know, one by one, it's faded away. And, you know, we figure it's important to be responsive to that rather than say, oh, no, we're going to keep on selling. Like we used to do T-shirts. We had a line of JList T-shirts with kanji messages like, I'm looking for a Japanese girlfriend, and that was really popular. But when the time came for us to say, look, we can't have a warehouse full of T-shirts that we only sell at San Diego Comic-Con and Anime Expo, it's just not, you know, so we had to, you know, make the hard decisions to say, okay, we're leaving this business, we're going to do this instead. And we, you know, communicate that well to our customers, I think. And some people are like, okay, cool, you understand. And some people are like, oh no, I want JList T-shirts forever. And so they actually go up in value quite a bit on eBay. It's pretty cool.
Do you usually kind of focus on seeing trends in Japan and hoping they take off in America, or are you kind of just doing like a mix? Like, how are you seeing trends? And if you're
always looking at
secrets,
yeah, we're trying to find something in Japan and do that, and then figure out how it'll happen. You know, maybe it'll catch on, maybe it won't. These days, it's really funny. Like over the past 6 or 8 years, China has been a big thing where like the Virgin Killer sweater will catch on. Of course, it comes out of China, but all the Japanese artists make their art. So it's sort of, it's a pan-Asian thing, really. And so there's a lot of trends that you don't really know where they came from, but because artists on Pixiv embraced it and turned it into a thing, and then everyone over the world, all over the world, just you know, really loves
it. So you sell
it.
In China, too?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, do we sell in China?
Yeah.
We don't sell in China. No, it's too hard.
Oh, okay.
Too difficult.
I figured that would be difficult.
Sometimes, occasionally. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, again, like the long tail of these things is just gets shorter and shorter and shorter. So nothing lasts more than a week or two. So it's just kind of tiring. Like, oh, I finally got that thing and now it's not popular anymore. Oh, what do I do? Jeez.
Yeah, I guess trend following is kind of one of those difficult things, but at the same time, it's probably what made you successful, right?
And really, like Doujinshi will come really into vogue and go out again, and come really into vogue and go out again. Right now, they're just super popular, and so we just do our best to sort of, you know, stake out which shows are popular, which fetishes are popular, if that's what we're going for. And right. So, you know, these shows are really good. Obviously, My Dress Up Darling is super popular. And we've got lots of doujins on the site.
I forgot to ask you, I had the very first question in my list and I completely skipped it because I wanted to get really to you. But the most important question before we get into anything else, I was wondering, what would it take for me to get a free copy of that Kotaku art book sent directly to me?
Which art book? Oh, the I'll send that to you.
The Kotaku one.
Can you do some posts about it? So I'll tell the guy who owns the 18, this is for promotional purposes, and he'll be like, yeah, because he loves, just do a video at it and show people how good it is. It's amazing. So that's
I would show that off for Craig. That's literally one of my favorite artists. Ranger Mod is right above him, but he's literally my second favorite artist of all time. Everything that comes out of his works, even like One Room and stuff, all over it. Like if have his artwork, I'm on it.
One of the changes that happened, so when we made J-List, we actually, before we did that, we made Jast USA, which is visual novels. So we were, doing visual novels. So that was our first business. And literally we said, it may take some time for visual novels to be accepted widely. Porn games were not a thing. And you couldn't go to Diamond Distribution and say, hey, I've got this porn game, will you sell it? There's no such thing as a distributor, unlike Japan. We said, okay, we got to make our own company. That's our company in San Diego, which is named PCR Distributing. And it was kind of funny that the word PCR came down to take a very different, completely unrelated. But anyway, so we made visual novels. It was a very, very slow thing to get them to be a thing. And then we slowly would get more and more popular companies. We did Exchange and Tokimeki, Check-In, some of the really cool early games. Then we did School Days. So it was more and more we got more... better and better games. And then sort of as another side business we started was J18 Publishing, which is where we go to artists and we license their book. Almost all the books are original doujinshi, and we make an English version. We take all the mosaic out, so it's completely uncensored and fully English. So that's, if you go to our site, you have a lot of those things on our website. And that's like another business that we do. And if anyone happened to come to our booth at Anime Expo, you probably were like amazed at the like 80 or 90 books that we had on display. It was really amazing, including the Kantoku art book.
Yeah, so that's each of your labels currently. That's J-List, J-Box, which describe each one of them. Because I know that J-List is supposed to be like adult. J-Box is like more for not safe for
work. J-List.com is adult products and the non-adult products that we have. J-Box.com is all ages only. So we got our figures. We have whatever the last of our stuff there. But mostly it's anime figures. J18 Publishing is our doujinshi line where we do art books and doujinshi, and now we have actually tankobon manga. So that's been taking a lot of energy, but it's really been great to see, like, this is the best MFing hentai manga and or doujinshi that anyone will ever publish, and that's been our goal. So that's been super great. And then Jast USA is our visual novel platform. And then a couple of years ago, we opened it up to any publisher. So if you come to Jast USA, you can find all of our games. You can find Manga Gamers games. You can find other games by other publishers. All potentially uncensored, depending on what that company's policies are. So almost all of them are uncensored. But there's a couple of Japanese publishers that are like, no, sorry, we can't do that. But so you can get those with the mosaic. But almost all uncensored and all in English.
Out of curiosity, before I realized that you guys were together or that you were actually a part of Jast, I had purchased a game and it was partially translated. Are they going to continue translating it?
What is the game?
Game Burrow or Goblin Burrow?
Goblin Burrow, I don't know. Was that from the Jast USA website?
It was from the Jast USA website. I remember I was actually talking... I was actually talking to the Discord about it because I purchased it and I was happy with having it. It was partially translated. And I was more curious as are they going to continue translating it and finish up some of those parts?
Based on the fact that I've never heard of it, I'm sure it's a third party title, not ours. So I don't know.
And that's
that's
what everybody was pretty much gotten to the consensus. Okay. And I'm just hoping that it's going to continue and finish translating at some point. So,
okay. I don't know. Is it Goblin? What's the other word?
Goblin Burrow.
Burrow. I've never heard of that, but any game that we do, like if we're having problems with the translation, we'll basically just, sorry guys, we're freezing it for 6 months while we go through and fix it. We wouldn't put out a game that was only partially translated. So that sounds like a third party title. And so anyway, I'll talk with the guy about it.
All right.
It's been fun doing visual novels. It was great, you know, having school days. Like, everyone hates school days, the anime, because meanwhile, we sold, you know, 10,000 copies of the game. So clearly it
because
was
of curiosity, just to find like, out. Oh, gotta, you know. Is it that bad, or is it just the anime adaptation?
The anime is, it has an original ending, and those ending, that ending is not in the game. It has other violent endings.
Spoil it. You don't
I didn't know that.
It.
But that's the point of school days. It's like, it's like watching a horror movie and saying, why do you have blood in this horror movie? Well, that's the point of the game.
Well, that was my only, my main curiosity. I actually want to go and do a video on school days specifically, because it is essentially what we all think about, the wonders of going after all these girls, but then there's the too many waifus will end your life food kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because eventually one of them doesn't like you anymore. So spoilers for school days. Sorry, everybody. It's been long enough, as I say. So what is it like to live in Japan, by the way? I mean, you've been there for how long? At least 25 years?
31 years.
31 years. Jeez.
It's a nice place to live. It's real easy to live here. I'm in Gunma Prefecture. If you know Initial D, I'm right at the base of Mount Akagi. So we're basically 100 kilometers north of Tokyo. So it's pretty nice. We're an easy trip, and you know, it's like a 2-hour bus ride into Tokyo.
There's an anime about that, right? Was it You Don't Know Gunma or something like that? I think there's an anime about it.
And all that is so true. That anime is hilarious. Door stop opening after a certain point, and if you don't know that, you're like, how do I get off the train?
That's one of those ones when I watch the show, I'm like, that was kind of funny. I kind of get what they're talking about there, but at the same time, I bet this is like 100 times more funnier for anybody that actually lives there.
One of my problems is, as a blogger, I'm like, well, I want to write about something and I want people to read what I write, but there's certain topics that are just like, wow, this is, you know, it's like Mississippi. Like, what would you like? Here's 10 things about Mississippi.
Inside
and
joke.
It probably wouldn't be like the most interesting thing. Yeah. And it's really funny, but then it's like, okay, I don't know if people would really understand it. And whenever I do a blog post like that, it gets read by like 500 people, and it's just like, I should really do something else with my time.
Isn't that the worst? Like, you put, I mean, I'm the same way, because I'm technically a content creator. Of course, I'm doing it for different reasons, but it is one of those things where you put like the most effort in something, you feel really good about it, and then you post it, and it's like nobody cares. Yeah. And it's like I get that a lot with like these really old Blu-rays that I'll get sent by Write Stuff, and I'll watch it like, Zetsuba Sensei, love it to death. It's like an old passion thing of mine, and I go and post it, and it's like nobody cares because it's so old or something that. Just, it doesn't keep. We're such a trendsetter, like you said. You're always looking at the trends of the current time. The old stuff doesn't really sell, so you have to kind of keep moving forward. It's the same thing with us. It's always the new anime. It's always the new content. Yeah, yeah. Nobody cares about the old stuff as much as you got like massive nostalgia for it. It just doesn't work in the end.
And I have one nice way to combat that. I've got a thing where every day on my Twitter, if you see my Twitter feed, it's at JList, and I post a bunch of stuff, and I'm always thinking, we got this figure and stuff like that. And one of the things I do is I do, here's your daily random H anime. And I just have this folder of classic, panty shots and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty neat where no one cares about an anime from 1998. But they may see a butt.
Yeah.
And butts and boobs from 1988. Like, at least they'll stop and they'll reflect on it and they'll make a comment and be like, oh yeah, I remember that. I watched it. It was like the first sexy thing I watched. And it's kind of neat. We're like, the power of boobs and panties will make it possible that which is impossible.
See, Zetsuba Sensei has a particular character who basically says that she'll sue for everything that people do.
Oh, I love her.
There's plenty of panty shots of her. I guess I should have put that as a thumbnail.
Oh, you should. But then on YouTube, that's the other thing where it's Twitter. Like, people complain about Twitter, and I'm like, no, you guys don't understand. Twitter is the last best hope for anything fun on social media. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you show one panties, you show one boob, you probably get, there's probably a strike system. You'll get your account frozen for 30 days. Twitter doesn't give a damn. I got like, actual boob, like little clips of hentai. I don't want too much content, but clip something that's entertaining, and no one cares. It's just wonderful. Yeah. I'm just wondering, how much longer is Twitter going to be this good?
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those things where you wonder how, if it's getting around those gray areas or something. I don't know, but yeah, I've had times where it literally gets flagged on YouTube, and it's like, there's nothing bad in there. Like, I had to do interspecies reviewers. It's a very difficult one to find good shots of that's not inappropriate, and it still gets marked, and I'm like, I literally chose all the shots that are not bad.
Yeah, probably just the word interspecies reviewers. It has it as a potential exactly. flag.
I think that's what it ended up being. It was literally what was in the title was what was flagging it. And it's like, you can't win. You can't win sometimes. Yeah. Now, I was asking earlier, and I think you pretty much already jumped into a little bit, but do you have something that's been around for a long time that's actually extremely popular on JList? Like, what's your most popular, I guess, product line? What's your most popular product line?
Well, if you go to our site now, obviously the number one product that has helped many of my male customers get through the pandemic is, of course, the Ownables. And boy, let me tell you, when the government gives people money, they come to JList, and we were very, 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 very thankful of the support.
I'm glad my taxes went to good work.
I was not expecting that answer in any way, shape, or form.
I was expecting that answer. I wasn't expecting that that addition, I guess. The fact that our tax dollars are going to good use. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it's a stress relief.
It is pandemic relief. I mean,
yeah,
it helps with mental health.
The state of New York said the safest sexual partner is yourself. And I put that out and I put that on my Twitter and boy.
Grab that real quick. Hey, yeah. I didn't say it. I didn't say it.
Yeah, the state of New York.
Oh gosh, that is crazy. What is the weirdest item that you have besides Ownables?
So on my blog,
Japan has a lot of weird stuff, but like the most weirdest thing you've ever sold, that actually sold. I guess you could do both. It doesn't have.
So I've got a blog post. Where is this? Even it's not working. Okay. I've got a blog post that shows all of the. Hang on. Never mind. So anyway, I've got a blog post that says like the top 17 hits of JList, and on that are things like I talked about Domo-kun. These are things that nothing sticks around that long, so they're no longer available. But like the old horse head mask, for some reason everybody thought, oh, the JList horse head mask. So every time a horse head mask blew up on the internet, we got credit for it. And I'm like, we're just one shop selling it.
Are we talking whatever. Like that one that got that lady banned on Twitch?
The horse head mask where it just looks like a horse and the eyes look crazy. I probably was that. Yeah.
Oh gosh, that's crazy. Do you have any certain? Now, is there anything that was like the top seller? Was that the mask that was the top seller that was weird?
Probably the number one seller was the Hello Kitty vibrator. That was just because a lot of people will not buy a vibrator, but it's a Hello Kitty shoulder massager. Well, and so and every woman wanted one in her dresser bed or drawer beside her bed.
Well, Hello Kitty was so huge. I wouldn't doubt that eventually they're like, oh, well.
Yeah, Hello Kitty was a category for us. And we would, like, every day we would be like, shall we post one, two, or three new Hello Kitty products? And that was the kind of flood of stuff that we had. Jeez. And then it was just died. It was just like, okay, Hello Kitty is not so fresh anymore. And we had to say, okay, time to recognize that and look for something else.
That's crazy.
Definitely like these days, obviously, anything that blows up and then gets doujinshi made about it is super popular, so or super important. So obviously, Genshi Ken, Hololive. So we're always like, okay, Hololive is important. Okay, what can we get for the site? as a shop, it's great when they make lots of figures because we're like, good figures, I like it. I hate it when an anime is really, really great and it gets no figures, which happens many, many times. And you're like, like Toradora,
or like
Toradora
the male characters,
is one of the most ever. Could we get a figure of Toradora? Like we got like one or two. Yeah.
That's the weirdest thing. Like you get like holos everywhere. Regular holo, like the Spice and Wolf holo. Plenty of holo lives, but yeah, it's like every month there's a new holo figure. It's like, I love her. It was the same with Saber. I love Saber and I have lots of Saber. I was mentioning it before we started. It was like, he was asking about getting into something and then you buy everything of it. Yeah, it was Saber for me. But every now and then it felt like, you know, can I get a Rentosaka? Can I get, Ilya? Can I get one of the other characters? Why does it always have to be like a million different Sabers?
Nobody loves Sakura. I'm just saying.
I've never seen a figure. I mean, they must have had some.
But no, it is one of those difficult things. It's like the ones that you enjoy a series, but you can't get like all the characters in that series, which is really always frustrating, obviously.
And of course, I sometimes try to write about, I like to investigate the back end of the industry and I write about why things happen. But obviously you have a lot of anime are made by, it's a production committee and it's, an animation studio. It's a overall design studio. It's the marketing company. And then if there's a figure company on board, you're going to get a lot of figures. And certain shows just prove that they will always, like, fans will always buy Ikitosin with Super Huge in the day, Strike Witches with Super Huge in the day. So they just, once the customers show them the money, they know every figure. And the one that was crazy was Mizuho from Please Teacher. Literally, we had like 120 figures in our database over the whole run, which is great. I love the character, but like, how about Anonatsu? Same basic show, same basic character. We got like one figure. Like, why does Anonatsu get nothing and this one gets like millions of figures? So I think it's related to what companies have relationships in the background. Kyoto Animation doesn't have those relationships often because they're not in Tokyo. They're a sort of different company. And so we almost got no figures from their stuff. Like, I think there were K-On! Figures of like the Figmas and stuff. But like, where's the complete line of every Kyoani toy in every popular format that we would all buy? And it's like, yeah, for some reason, they just don't.
That was another one that was kind of interesting for me. Like, they did the 5th anniversary one, and I grabbed one of the Azunya one over that one, but it was like, you'd think there'd be, like, everywhere. Like, for us, it feels like Kyoto Animation stuff is just, like, hotcakes. Like, where's all the content for this? But I don't know, is it an aspect that they just kind of focus on trying to keep it more in-house than most? Or
a lot of these companies, like, to us, they look like they're amazing, worldwide, dominating companies. And then, like, I went to the Kyoani office 2 years before that horrible, horrible day. Mm. And it was literally, it was an apartment building just like J-List, which is, like, our building is set up to be, like, a six-unit apartment building. And then instead of apartments, we just had it laid out as our company for what we needed. And it was just like that. It was a three-story, not two-story. But it was very... it wasn't what you'd expect. You go to Disney and it's like Disney has this amazing, you know, footprint as a major studio. And the same is true with Ghibli. They have a real, you know, very low key, headquarters. So it's just, you know, we don't know what to think about. They're a lot smaller than what we think of them as, but based on their works. When we went to the store that's next to the studio, they literally had nothing but free the BL anime. And it was all made by Animate. And I'm pretty sure what they did was they licensed stuff to Animate. And instead of paying money for the royalties for using the characters, they just give them that much money worth of goods. And so all the goods just were like whatever Animate doesn't sell. And they just give them that much stuff to sell in their little shop. And it wasn't satisfying. Basically, Kyoani licenses it all out to other companies. And Animate is really, really smart. Okay. They do all the BL stuff. So they have like... the BL floor if you go to their store in Akiba. Jeez,
that's crazy. Well, is there any like challenges or benefits that you kind of feel in doing the line of work that you do? Is there things that you face that just frustrate you to like, I just going to give up? You never want to give up, but
we're lucky because we got started early. We have a lot of brand equity. Everyone understands us and they're, hey, Peter, how you doing? And I'm the first guy who sold you hentai back in 1997 or whatever. Right. So all that is cool.
You made me a man.
I can't get that, yeah. But yeah, it's funny because people like I had a girl. She like on her 18th birthday, she came over to me and she bought a hentai game and it was like a sister love hentai game. I was like, man, I'm not going to ask any questions, but this is so cool. It was like a rite of passage for her now that she's 18.
Right.
But anyway, yeah,
people grow up.
Yeah, it's not a hard job. It's fun. It's tricky because there's so many things where we've got eight figures that we have to post to the site, and we've got the Megami magazine came in. We have to get scans up. So there's a lot of work. But I mean, the least fun product at J-List is still really fun. Like it's not like we're using like boring, you know, aluminum whatever. We're just like using some kind of machinery. We're like. We're posting figures and we're posting naughty products and we're posting lotion that has certain scents, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of thing is really fun, I think. And we have a small staff right now these days. Everyone's real hardworking.
So you actually sell in domestic too, or is it strictly?
We don't, export? we just sell abroad only. There's no point to selling inside Japan.
Okay, so physically an 18-year-old didn't come to your place and say, can I buy something?
That was at a convention. That was at.
Oh, okay. 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 Yeah. That makes sense then. All right. This is probably gonna get more into the weeds of things, probably more difficult question for you, but you can answer it however you want. But obviously the culture issues in the West regarding things that are inappropriate, What sort of challenges do you face with the ever-changing culture in the West, and what's acceptable? Not, I mean, obviously, a really prime example that I can easily give is Australia, where they ban a lot of imports of certain items. How is that? Is there? How do you guys usually handle that stuff? Do you see sort of issues with certain things not being allowed to be exported, and you find out about it as you're working on it?
Yeah, we keep an eye on things, and we, you know, like already we don't sell. If there's a certain book or magazine or artist, like, oh, we can't sell it, we'll just, you know, send it back to the place where we got it from. So we won't push the envelope too much. But even like, you know, the most vanilla hentai ever, if we ship it to Canada, oh my God, this is CP, because all hentai is CP. And it's like a cultural thing. Like, how can you think that? Are you even taking 2 seconds to read it? Her boobs are this big. How can you apply that term to this? It just doesn't make any sense. But that's just a cultural hang up where, and I call it trying to do the right thing by doing the wrong thing, which that's my word for it. And, you know, I understand countries like Canada, countries like Australia, you know, maybe they've got, you know, they certainly can have any opinion they want. On the other hand, I'm not a fan of treating your citizens who are above the age of 18 or 20 or whatever is legal in that country as a baby who needs to be protected, and no one should be looking at porn because your mommy told you, you know, you shouldn't look at porn or whatever. And it's like, that's not the world we live in. The internet, whatever a customs agent in one country or another country does or doesn't do, the internet is going to break through that. So it doesn't really matter. You know, I'm selling doujinshi, and I'm careful what I'm selling, and it's all very reasonable, I think. And if there's some really, really, you know, off-color stuff, obviously someone's going to torrent it or whatever. So it's, you know, so I don't know, like,
is there like ways that you guys go about researching that stuff? I mean, is there like laws and stuff that you guys are keeping an eye on? Do you have lawyers that keep an eye on that stuff, or is it just really not just really, kind of keeping an eye on the markets? Japan.
Yeah, we're just a company in Japan, and if something gets seized and we get a notification of that, we say, well, what happened and why? Okay, Canada doesn't like this book. Well, what about this book? Again, didn't like that book either. Okay, we'll just stop shipping to Canada. And then that solves the problem, unfortunately, for the people in Canada who can't get the books. But then they can get other things, like games they don't seem to care about, for example, because they can't imagine that a game could have pornographic content. So visual novels are fine.
That was a good thing back in the day. I mean, I keep telling people that was like the greatest thing ever, because, I mean, I can think back way, way back. When we used to have those places where you went inside this building, and they actually had like DVDs and VHSs, and you could take them and you can rent them for a while. You actually took them for a while, and then you brought them back. I know this is crazy stuff for youngins, but it was great because you'd go into the cartoon section and you just have all this like extremely violent stuff that you could just pull off the shelf and go, I mean, nobody's going to mind because it's in the kids section, but they never knew back then that it wasn't cartoons. It was something much more and super violent and just had adult content all over it. So
I want to say that's where I learned about Onegai Sisters or something like that.
It's crazy stuff. Now, do you have any sort of, we have one of our questions from our community members is actually asking about, do you have any sort of update on what's going on with Australia and their bands of imports?
No, really. I did a blog post just saying, you know, to the best of our knowledge. So what the main thing that happened was during the pandemic, EMS. So the Japanese post office is amazing. So we had the really big earthquake and tsunami in on March 11, 2011. And we didn't miss a day of shipping. The next Monday, they come and they're packing up packages. I'm like, what are you guys doing here? Japan is destroyed. They're like, oh, no problem. We've got everything set up. So they're amazing, except for Corona, where all the airplanes stopped flying. Air mail is carried in the hold of the airplanes. So that they just said, sorry, we can't do it. And so the only way to ship anything was DHL. And I'm super happy with DHL. I love them to death for being, you know, helping us get through all of that and helping our customers. But then when we were shipping to Australia, they made an official thing saying, please don't ship adult products anymore. So we had to stop. But then now that EMS is shipping again to Australia, we do ship to Australia. So, I mean,
it was actually a carrier issue.
Yeah. It was basically DHL specifically said, we were asked not to accept these, so please don't. We're like, okay, problem, no problem. But the post office, I mean, you can't say that to the post office is our opinion. So basically we do ship to Australia now. And of course we advise any customer to use judgment. And, you know, we have a package removal service. So if you have an own a hole where it's got a sexy girl on the outside, probably want to have that removed. And then you just get the thing and wrap it up in bubble wrap so no one knows what it is.
Yeah, I've seen that option on their site. I thought it was kind of interesting. Like, you have like a package cover up sort of thing. Like, you can, whatever you buy, if it's got like a packaging that's obviously very obvious, you guys repackage it for people.
Yeah,
that was a cool way, like a incognito mode for your products.
And one of the things, like it's terrible the world we live in where guys, you know, aging politicians will decide who can do what with their bodies or whatever. But I'm pretty sure that no one is going to say, all right, guys, fapping is illegal now. I don't believe that they'll try to do that. So I'm pretty sure that Ono holes are probably safe.
Pretty sure there's an anime that does that, that talks about that.
Yeah. Not quite Shima there. Netta.
You watch Shima Netta?
I love that show.
Yeah, it was great. That was awesome.
I think I'm the only person that didn't enjoy it. I'm planning on rewatching it. I'll rewatch it, and because I think it's more relevant now than anyway, because this whole stuff with Sony, which I guess is a nice little segue to start jumping into that stuff. Okay. So I guess I want to start off with getting a general sense of you. What do you really feel like with, or at least what you see in from the Japanese perspective? Is there any talk over there, or what your perspective is on the whole situation with Sony basically buying up everything in the West regarding anime?
So as I've written in my posts, basically like it was like 1980 or 2017 or something like that, Sony moved their PlayStation headquarters from Tokyo to Los Angeles or to the US, wherever it is. And they basically, like, the idea is that the PlayStation's future shall be determined by the American office now, because that's where our sales are so good. Japanese fans don't like to buy PlayStations. They're much happier playing mobile games and things like that. And so at the time, I believe Sony said, wow, look at all the money, you know. Or so Sony has always been into anime. They've always owned Cloverworks. They've owned Aniplex. So, I mean, people are thinking that it's a new thing. Well, they've literally done it from like 1995, but then it's been, you know, big. It's been rising and rising and being more and more important. So I think they said, wow, the future of our company should be anime. And then they bought Crunchyroll, or they bought Funimation, then they bought Crunchyroll. And then, of course, now they've bought Right Stuff, which is a competitor of ours, but actually a partner of ours, because we've worked with them a lot. All the books that we sell and all the games that we sell, we sold them through Right Stuff, and they've been a real good friend to us over the years. But so Crunchyroll, or Sony through Crunchyroll, bought Right Stuff. And so then the implication was that all of the adult stuff had to go, and that's going to be sold on a new site, which is still being made. Do you know if that site is up yet?
I don't. Last I checked a couple of days ago, it was still pretty much a splash screen.
Okay. And that's a difficult thing to, like, now we're going to make a website. It's like, you don't just make a website.
Yeah.
And of course, an adult site, you can't just make a Square site, because you never know when Square will pull the plug. So that's something you sort of need to get your hands dirty and do yourself.
We just contacted GoDaddy and say, we need an e-commerce site. Can you throw one up real quick?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, and SKUs and everything you have to enter in there that sounds like a huge undertaking, especially with, I don't know how many actual Etero products they had. So I would assume that's probably a very time consuming.
They bought a lot from us. We were real happy to work with them. But yeah, I mean, fundamentally, the idea of one company buying another company and mergers happening and things like that, that's normal, I would say, in any industry. I've always had a sort of thought that it's odd that anime is so popular, but there aren't a lot of startups. Imagine in, you know, crypto, you can't throw a rock without hitting someone who's got a new crypto startup or whatever. Or
Be careful. The comments will get flamey.
I don't know. Okay.
You don't talk about crypto.
Okay. In general, though, anime should have, you know, new retailers coming and new publishers coming and new, you know, like companies that'll do things in new ways. And then whoever has the best idea, they'll do really well, and they'll maybe get bought by Sony or something like that. So I fundamentally, it's not a problem that Sony or that Crunchyroll bought Right Stuff. It's just obviously not fun if you're a customer of that company and you're like, hey, I can't get the books, the porn books that I was buying, or the 18 plus books that I was buying, or the games or whatever. So that's a bummer. You know, it's probably just one of those things, and you know, more customers for JList. I can't really complain about that. But
I was going to ask you, that was one of my questions that I had, is did you see a bump in sales? Because I know that when we first talked about the buyout and them taking the products off there, what was the first thing we said? Well, they're still JList. Like, JList is still right there, and you're probably going to have a lot better selection there for anything that's going to be inappropriate for Sony.
Yeah, probably. Didn't really notice. I might have been I was actually in America when that was happening, so I was like too busy doing convention stuff. But anyway, I think, you know, it's just normal, and obviously we don't want anyone telling us what we can't watch. We don't want you know, I don't understand how they can't find a solution for it, but Crunchyroll seems to only be showing the censored versions of all of those great anime, like, not was it, I was going to get actually great, but the Harem at the End of the World, things like that. I mean, they were showing the censored version, which is really weird. Like, Crunchyroll, you have to solve this problem. You have to say, if we don't know how old you are, you have to watch the censored version. But if we verified your age,
yeah, I think I've seen some people commenting that they had to actually say that they were of age, and then it was censored. It's like, you're already going past that wall. Why not have what's in there?
But that's so Japanese. That's like, and I've written, like, Japanese are very risk averse, and if you'll have like one Japanese executive going, but wait a minute, what if someone in, you know, somewhere in America is upset by this? We can't
Tokyo
take the risk. We have to. Yeah. And it's just like, are you kidding? Well, that's a little bit different. I mean, the swastika in the West is a little bit different from a kiss.
But it's, like, not a kiss swastika.
it's a
emoji. Yeah. You know exactly what it is.
Right.
But no, that was a funny one, because I remember, I think they actually, in Japan, the studios, I think they said that they were disincluding it because they kind of just wanted to throw it out there. And obviously there is countries where even if you say it's a emoji symbol, it doesn't matter. It's just not allowed. Yeah. Germany is not going to be allowed there. But it is one of those things where it is frustrating because, again, it's somebody keeping you from watching something that's legitimately not bad. I mean, the same thing for the adult content. If you're saying that you're an adult, why is it bad? Isekai Harem, I think, is the worst case right now, where we have Crunchyroll has a product and they're on the production committee. Why don't they have the uncensored version? I understand where sometimes they probably won't let them have it because they want to have it maybe broadcast exclusively on ATX or something. But it doesn't make sense when it's you're putting money into it. Why wouldn't you have it?
My theory is that the rise of companies like Tencent that are funding anime a lot more, if you see the Tencent logo and stuff, anytime Tencent is doing it, they're going to take it and they're going to have the most censored version, and they've got to make sure they don't piss off the government like they have in the past. And so it's like, but like, you shouldn't have two levels, like no censorship and then censorship for Saudi Arabia / China / wherever. Like, you have to be able to, like, how about, you know, meet us halfway or something like that. It has to be more nuance to it. And they're just not doing
versions of it.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of ways. Like, actually, Redo of Healer was dumb, but at least it didn't censor stuff. It just didn't show you the part, or it had like a shadow. It was not completely annoying. You could actually watch those scenes.
That's usually what I prefer, where it's, just kind of being very clever about it. I mean, like, now we have...
Like, go out the window and hear what's happening, and that would be fine.
Yeah, Vermil and Gold right now is a prime example of that, where you technically have them without clothes, but they're, you know, the shots and everything are perfect so that you don't really see everything. Okay. So it's still there, but it's not there.
Yeah.
But no, that's interesting. So you guys actually have sold a lot of stuff through Right Stuff. So they were the distributor for you, or were you selling stuff on their site?
Yeah, basically, we sold wholesale all of our books, all of our games for like 20 years. I mean, it was just a really long time.
Now, is there a lot of products being pulled from there? Have you seen like a lot
of products? Basically, they've stopped ordering. They're ordering very small amounts for whatever orders they had. And hopefully when they get their new site up and running, that'll start up again. So we're certainly hopeful, and we'll be supportive either way.
Now,
it's so funny because, like, Japanese companies, occasionally they'll be like, well, this company doesn't like this company, and so they would never work together. And I'm like, who the hell cares? I just want to sell stuff to customers and make everyone happy. Like, I can't believe that this company and this company don't get along, and so they wouldn't ever talk to each other. But I'll be like, give me your product and I'll translate it and sell it and pay you royalties. It's easy.
It's like one of those things where sometimes money matters. I mean, you have employees and stuff that you're trying to support. I mean, your beef with another company doesn't matter. You want to support your customer. You want to support your employees.
Just want everyone to be happy.
Don't talk to each other.
Like, school days, it's good. So let's spread it around. Let's, games that are really good. Like Muramasa, game that we're finally going to ship the limited edition after like a huge delay. And that's really good. Let's get more people to be excited about it. So that's all I want.
That actually led into an actually very interesting question that we've actually kind of speculated about a few times, of how you mentioned the two companies, they don't really get along. How you and how you actually work with these companies, you probably experience this more than us, because we are just speculating about it. They hold their relationships very, very valuably. So
definitely.
if if one company has a frustration with, or let's say employee A and employee B from the other company, they don't get along, they won't do any business. How much of the save face versus the actual relationship build and how that plays into future business, how strong is that? Would you say?
I think like the biggest issue is, well, if for our case, as long as we're building trust, which is the Japanese word is shindai. So if we are building that with the companies we work with, then that'll sort of help us build all these little frameworks. Like, because we have a really good relationship with Nitro Plus, who makes like all the best visual novels, and they're able to hook us up with Minato Soft, who makes a bunch of really other good games. And so because we did a good job with Steins Gate, we were able to, and they said yes, you know, they sold a lot of copies and they paid all the royalties that they said they would. And then they'll hook us up with other companies, and that trust is really important. Just in terms of companies together, it's just a matter of like, it's so funny, like people went to high school together and they didn't like each other then, and now they both run companies now. And it's just, there's a lot of weird stuff on behind the scenes. There was a, back in the 90s, there was this cool company that published hentai doujin anthologies. So it's sort of like a tankobon version of a bunch of doujinshi of Sailor Moon, Evangelion, all the popular stuff of the time. And literally, like, why does that exist? It shouldn't exist, because it's like a professionally published work of a copyrighted thing. You know, even like doujin, you're not supposed to like mass produce doujinshi beyond a certain point. And basically it was that the guy of that company went to high school with the owner, Toshio Okada, of Gainax. And so he's like, oh, sure, no, whatever. So it's just, you never know what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. So because the main reason why I even brought that up is because we've always never could understand, like, and that the only reason we could even speculate is because we know of the whole relationship thing that they have. Yeah. And so a lot of the, what anime gets, sent to which companies, like, Crunchyroll will get all these, which would make sense on a contract, basis, but some didn't make any sense. So it did. And the only way we could figure is maybe because they had a specific, inroad with these particular publishers, and so
quite possibly the relationship have relationships with these five publishers, but then these five, somebody else like Sentai Filmworks will take them, and they did well, so they continue that. It's quite possible that that's the case. I don't know. Actually, I don't know what's on Crunchyroll because I can't watch it here in Japan. It's right. Funny.
Well, that gets to our sponsor. One of these days, I'll get a VPN sponsorship. Oh man, no, I was trying to see if I can find if Arrow Anime Store was up, but I couldn't, it wasn't coming up, so I'm guessing they're still not going. So do you know, are you aware of if it's in the same warehouse, if they're still going to be shipping out of the same warehouse?
No idea. Don't even know if they're gonna, I mean, if I were Crunchyroll, I would say Iowa is a really nice place, but it's got to be hard to ship stuff there. You ship stuff and then you keep it in Iowa and then you ship it out again. So I would, if I were them, I would think, what's a better place to base my company? Somewhere along the Pacific coast. So I don't know if they're going to be moving the company. I haven't looked into any details.
That was the sad thing, because I think I already know where this conversation is going. But one of my questions was, with Right Stuff going, ew, gross, get this out of our warehouse. But oh, by the way, there's this completely unrelated company that's going to handle all that stuff. I always joked about the fact that it was really, and I would love to get your perspective on this. We knew that deal went through long before it was announced, right? I mean, sure, it wasn't sure, something that was overnight, but it is one of those things that's funny that as much as they're grandstanding on the idea that, you know, they're not going to carry all this inappropriate stuff anymore, what happened like literally a day before it was announced? They just finished up like this big 35th anniversary sale where it's like, and you sold all those products, didn't you? So don't act as if this is something where you're like, ew, gross, we won't sell that naughty stuff. We're better than that, posh, posh. Don't mean to offend any, was it the English folks out there? but it's crazy to think that stuff is. I think that disconnection that really happens is, I think people like that one-stop shop. Or, I mean, you can probably disagree, but it was nice when Right Stuff was this one-stop shop. You can get all, now granted, I wasn't really searching. If I was looking for that kind of stuff, I'd probably go to JList. But if I, I could see people enjoying the idea of having all that stuff in one location. I feel like splitting it really does bother people a lot.
And Right Stuff has been around since 1997. Can you imagine 1987. Yeah, it has to be long. So they're older than us. So I mean, it's 1987. So they were a catalog shop, and then they became a .com in like 1994. So they're just old as hell. So I'm sure the owner is happy to be like have less on his
plate. Sean Plechter is probably really happy, but he's now sitting in their offices. I don't know if he's going to actually go to their offices, but
he's done a lot of really great things. He's things that would never have gotten licensed because they are not at the forefront of everyone's mind. He went out and said, no, we're going to do a remaster of Project Echo. We're going to license these really good things. He did Victoria Made.
Yeah.
Captain Tyler. He did a lot of really good stuff. I would not want to, the amount of work to do an anime, like games are hard, but at least like one or two guys can translate a game over the course of like 1.5 years. So it's a lot more work to do dubbing and marketing and just a lot of work.
Yeah, I think that's one of the bigger sad things that I see with the whole situation is like I kind of wonder if he's going to be able to do those. They were obviously, you know, pet projects.
True.
Especially Captain Tyler, that was literally his favorite anime of all time. Yeah. He put a lot of work into that. I keep saying Zetsuba Sensei. If you look at the liner notes, like the translation notes, they have this 300-page book for the first season that's just nothing but references. Where they come from, and it's that kind of passion that you see in that. I mean, Aria, the passion they put into Aria and the Blu-ray release of that. It's like
I've sent many customers there, like go buy this from them. That's really good.
And that's one of the things that during one of our podcasts I had mentioned when I was doing my normal tongue lashing of some of these companies is that corporatized sanitation of the product. People know and love, and that's one of the things that I've always been drawn to your store and or your Twitter feed in a lot of cases of this obvious love of the culture per se.
Oh, yeah.
And it, like Andrew was talking about with the Right Stuff and Sean Kleckner and he was very similar where he has that love of the culture and it oozes out of everything that they do. That's crucial, especially for sales. And like you mentioned earlier, the whole branding thing, it's going to turn some people off, but there's the other group. Those are the ones that you want, the ones that truly love it. And they love to see the person who's selling to them absolutely geek out over whatever the heck it is that they love. And that's the point. When you have Andrew was talking about with all the notes of the translator, that makes it's those soft touches.
Person will not do that because they're not getting any extra money for that. It's just like, no, I want you to read this.
Exactly. And that's the thing that I kind of wish these companies would understand. And no, you're not going to get it because it's a corporate machine. That's the frustrating thing that you wish. I keep speaking out to the wind. You're losing your customer goodwill. That is crucial for a business to make it.
One thing I'm concerned about is there's a whole category of just ecchi fan service anime. And it's just, you know, boobs. It's not over the top. It's not anywhere hentai. It's just very, very fun, very entertaining. Sexy camera angles, you know, Robin and something like that. That type of anime, I'm just terrified that it's going to go away because I don't believe they're getting licensed by Netflix. Maybe they're getting licensed by Crunchyroll. And like, if they can't make money and things like Miss Dorm Mother, whatever it was called,
Goddess Dormitory.
That kind of show is great, and then like we'll sell the Blu-rays, but that's like a specialty item because they're like $80 each. So we'll sell the Japanese Blu-rays for collectors, and we'll say, you know, 5 or 6 of those each. But yeah, like that kind of anime, we really need to protect it because we need that level of anime. We need super pure stories for boys and girls. We need BL, we need DL, we need everything. But we also need, you know, very very entertaining, oops, my boobs fell in your face. Sorry, you know, that kind of fun thing. And if that can't be served by the streaming model, what's going to happen?
Well, truth be told, I mean, what did we cut our teeth on was Tenchi Muyo. And technically, that's what one of those shows. So, I mean, no matter how you look at it, those shows have a you can grow into the Shougen Rokugo Shinju, which is a masterpiece. And I'll say it until I probably am hanging in the grave. But when it comes down to it, the youngins, they've got to not necessarily. I mean, if you want to wait until they're 25, fine. I'm who am I to make up all these crazy laws? I think that it should be allowed a little bit younger, but that's my choice. When it comes down to it, you need to be able to have that understanding that when they anime is not for kids, and I wish people would understand that. Okay, and if it's
there's a genre for kids, and it's shonen, and there's a genre for girls, it's shoujo, you know,
and if you don't want the hentai, fine, but there's that in between area of the comic mischief, and there's nothing like wrong with this. Mischief.
So good. I what would we do if we didn't have Kiss This?
Yeah,
Kiss Exit.
Oh my god, that's a good question. There is, how do you see that kind of? We call it gatekeeping, that aspect of what is chosen to be coming over and what's not. And I think that you kind of brought up earlier that whole the example that we always give is the idea that at some point PlayStation moved their brand over to the US because that's where it was most successful. And now we're seeing so much of Sony start to get into anime over in the West. And the fear is that that same thing happening. Now, everybody makes the argument PlayStation's a different branch of Sony. That's right. Completely different. It's like, yeah, but you also take consideration that it all comes down from the top, right? Eventually, that stuff will come back down to the top. And that's always kind of been the fear for people, and now we're kind of starting to see it, right? I mean, now they're buying right stuff, and all this inappropriate stuff gets kicked out.
What, like, one thing that's like, I'm always trying to, like, reassure people. Like people will be like, oh, no, anime is ending because of this happened. And I'm like, well, hold on. So what I say is that, well, first of all, you know, obviously Sony's been involved in producing anime. A lot of really sexy anime have been made by CloverWorks or what was the other one? They own two different studios. So, I mean, a lot of times, you know, they're like, they did Sword Art Online. So that scene with Asuna's breast and whatever the movie was, that's by Sony. So there's no current reason to fear that anime will be censored like PlayStation was, because PlayStation, for anyone who doesn't know, PlayStation, as of a few years ago, they basically said a swimsuit is too sexy for an anime game. We got to put steam bars over the swimsuit to make sure no one has any problem with anything.
And the point that I always make is Senran Kagura's creator basically said he was done. Like, they literally killed that franchise. He was like, if I can't sell on PlayStation, I'm not going to make the money, I'm done. And he went off to do mobile games, I believe. So,
And that, that'll affect what gets made. That'll affect what really genius people who want to do a thing are like, sorry, I can't do this anymore. Okay, I'll do something else. So that's problematic. And it's hilarious that if you want to play sexy anime games, go get a Nintendo Switch. What the hell?
Right?
They used to be the one that was all about posh.
Yeah. I'm a little bit more on the paranoid side. Okay, my issue is not so much what they're doing now; it's more along the lines of all that power conglomerating into one spot, and then take it from an abstract idea of it could skew the way that the Japanese are the communication that the customer in the West is communicating to the producer in Japan. You know, does that make sense? Where it's not necessarily that we want to buy what you have, for instance, at JList, but the communication through this big company comes in and says, oh yeah, but we have lots of money and our customers want that product. Does that make sense? Our customer wants your censored product, or they want Harem and the Labyrinth, the censored version. No, we don't. We want the uncensored version. But Crunchyroll is only giving us the censored version. And then what are we doing? We're going somewhere else to watch it, and they're not getting the views. And so therefore they're communicating to Japan, oh, well, the West doesn't want shows like Harem and the Labyrinth, which is, I've been preaching about this show for a long time. I love it.
I love it. That's how you do a vanilla sex scene. We will never be in the situation we were in this season. That was the best. Episode 4. Oh, I could not believe that.
Does that make sense? It's not so much the fact that they're censoring, they're skewing the communication that no matter how you look at it, money is our communicating us as consumer. We want this product, but we have this, like Andrew was saying, the gatekeeper says, yeah, they're coming to us. They want to buy this and they want the censored version, which is not true. We don't want that. We want the uncensored.
And you think they could solve the problem. You just have a special thing where you go on a website and you enter your, you click a box saying, I absolutely am over 18 and I'm not going to let my 12-year-old nephew watch
sneak
this.
Sneak in.
The thing is, the minute you do that, that's like a contract. Okay, now if something happens, it's your problem, not our problem.
Yes.
So that's not a problem at all. But the Japanese, whoever's in the background is so scared of, but you know, Americans sue whatever, you know, they walk down the street and they sue you for something and just, they're so afraid of that kind of thing. And then it's like, it's 55-year-old executives who are retiring in 2 years and they're like, but what if I don't get my retirement because of this one dangerous thing? It's like, no one's going to take away your retirement. Fucking hey, just do your job. Make your customers happy. Ugh, it's very frustrating.
I think that was my first, introduction to the aspect that's how Japan sees the West. I think I've seen a couple other cases where it has like the foreigner that sues everybody. But Zetsuba Sensei was like that first time. Like,
that's genius.
Is that really us? Is that really us?
One of our secret sauces as a company is we basically said, okay, there's no distribution companies for Eroge, for visual novels. So we'll make that. So we have a corporation in San Diego. And then we're a proper corporation here in Japan, you know, Japanese corporation. So we can make a contract. And if we don't follow our contract, you can sue us because we're a corporation. If we were like an individual, if we were located in some weird off far off country, they wouldn't be able to sue us. But they know that we'll do what we say because we're a proper corporation. And then on the American side, they're the proper corporation. And basically, for a game, a company will basically give us the copyright. We'll publish the English version. We completely own the English version. If there's any problem, it's our fault. It doesn't have their copyright in it anymore, the English version. And so we have like do not re-import to Japan. So we're taking all the responsibility away from that for that one guy who's going to complain. They don't have to worry about it because it's on us instead of them. If we accidentally sell a copy to a 17-year-old guy at a convention, that's on us, not on them. So that's been the way we've found success, is to just completely take away all the responsibility. And if we screw up, it's our problem. And that allows certain doors to open.
That's actually an interesting way to look at it. I thank you for bringing that up, because that's obviously one of the big part of that whole discussion that we've always kind of had, is that do you believe that we're at that point now where there's enough, I guess, value in the West that they could dictate that? It's not so much that, you know, Sony over here is going, hey, stop doing naughty things, make sure to do less naughty things so we can stream it on our platform. Or do you think it's more of a fact of we have enough money that we're giving to you guys that we are now a valuable market? We've always had a perspective for the longest time that Japan's making so much money Japan's, the studios and the producers are making so much in Japan. It's more like the whole Western market is kind of an afterthought. Like, oh, you want this too? Okay, we're going to keep making money over here, but sure, give me some money as well. Do you think we're ever at that point where they make more money on streaming services and selling merch in the West that they actually start making decisions to fit what the West would want?
One of the topics of discussion when the Japanese news companies they came to Anime Expo back in July, and they were reporting on it. And basically one of the discussion points was that the worldwide anime market has now surpassed the Japanese domestic anime market. So certainly that's a concern where, you know, Dragon Ball has more value as a worldwide thing than it does in Japan in terms of manga and things like that. And every product where, you know, gets pirated a little bit, but in general, there's enough legal ways for them to monetize it. They're just making more money outside of Japan than inside. When I the first time I saw Universal Studios, the Universal Studios logo on an anime, how they what the fuck? And I know their American company is a funding anime, but I'm like, you're putting your logo on this, and I was just really scared. Like, well, are we going to now get sequel, prequel, reboot, like Hollywood? And that hasn't happened yet. But on the other hand, I don't know. Brave Witches. When they made Brave Witches, I was really concerned because I'm like, Strike Witches is amazing. And one of the reasons it's amazing is all the panty shots.
Yep.
Brave Witches said, we're going to take all the panty shots out and just enjoy the show.
Luminous Witches.
The same thing. And so I'm like, did this come about because some executive in Universal said, I really like that Strike Witches, but we got to get those panty shots out.
Everybody was making the argument that it was because the idol aspect. They were trying to sell this idol group, and they don't want to have them be that way on the show. And I'm like, tell me an idol show out there that doesn't have lewd stuff in the actual show, and they don't expect it on the stage. Well, I guess some people would expect it on the stage.
But... Well, sometimes they get really creative. Like, it's like K-On! Was genius, because everyone thinks they saw Mio's panties when she fell down in that episode. But they didn't. They showed you a rice bowl, but you remember seeing the stripes, and you remember seeing the panties. So that's the pinnacle of getting creative with your... We're going to show you, we're not going to show you, and you're going to think that we showed you, but we didn't. So they could do stuff like that, but I mean, I like Strike Witches the way it is.
Yeah, I agree. I have a big old box set up here somewhere.
Oh, nice.
But Luminous Witch is not working for me.
Fukada, what's his name? Fumikane-san? I can't remember his name. But anyway, I love that artist. One artist created that whole genre. One artist just did some doodles of World War II mecha merged with girls. And then he made a line of figures of that from Konami, and he made a couple pre-shows, then he made Strike Witches, and other mecha show, Kankore, Girls
and Tons. I was this close to getting into all those figures, and I'm like, no, those things are expensive, and there's a lot of them. But I was this close to getting into all those figures. They were great figures. They had these really great poses and everything in air, obviously, but they were really nice figures. I was like very close to getting that. And that's, like I said, the whole Saber thing. Once you get into it, there's no turning back.
I have that problem, but with R2-D2 figures. I literally have like 80 R2 units of different sizes. I'm like, I probably need to roll back to that because I'm a Star Wars collector in addition to anime.
Yeah, I'll have to show the... I think I had that recording when you were still in there, so maybe I'll have to show a shot of that on the video. Quite a collection. I was thinking that he was going to start to show me up, and I was going to have to turn my camera so everybody can see all these. I don't want to get shown up on my own stream. What's up with that? But no, that's a good point, though. I think that eventually we're going to get that point where it overtakes... Oh, obviously, it's... Technically, they're saying it's overtaking it, but I think that's my only fear, because... Did you see the whole situation with Manga Up?
What is it? What happened?
Square Enix made an app called Manga Up, and it was their way of distributing their manga. Okay. And they wanted to do a full worldwide release of it immediately. And so you can imagine, if you're doing a worldwide release of manga, that it's going to have to follow the rules of worldwide release. So it's like you should make a blog post about this. I figured you were going to say, I made a blog post of that, actually. Every question I have, you're like, I have a blog post for that, actually.
I don't follow this stuff. It's not in Japan. I don't follow it too much, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. I was figuring you'd probably see me complain about it. But no, they literally, what I assume happened is they set an algorithm to look in all these hundreds of panels of manga, because obviously they have, a child's knee got censored. They basically sent this algorithm for, like, you know, obviously thousands of pages of manga to cover up anything that possibly looked like nudity. And that's how they released their so if you went through there and you would see like a child's knee or something like that, they would censor it. This lady wearing jeans, they censored her groin area. It was that bad. Like, anything that possibly could look resemble
something
inappropriate.
That's a problem, because they say the world is this one thing, but like America and Saudi Arabia, it's a very conservative society. We're not.
Bingo.
All of Europe is not. China is. So you've got to have a dial that you can set, or just don't do it at all, you know? And,
well,
you know,
the,
we had
this whole thing. It's like,
first
they could
have. It was like, nipples. Wow, they have nipples in manga. Now we're like, yeah, of course they do. Come on. It's no big deal. Everyone has nipples.
Oh, child, welcome to the world. Let me welcome you in. But no, that was, I think, the biggest problem with that. But that was kind of that sign of what I got from that whole situation with Manga Up was that mentality of something being available worldwide. Because I think one of the things that we've kind of discussed before is this concept of having the stuff available worldwide distribution by one company. Like having the producers have a company they own that is a streaming service, and so they can send direct from Japan to, say, the United States. But the problem there that I've kind of pointed out before is that, well, they're also going to have to make sure that they make that copy work for everywhere. There's certain countries where having, yes, a little bit too much showing is going to be not allowed there. Again, there's the Tokyo Revengers example. Yeah, they probably could have streamed it to the US with the Manji symbol, maybe put a little explanation at the beginning of it. This isn't what you think it is. It's a Manji symbol. You know, inform people rather than block it. But still, like we mentioned earlier, somewhere like Germany, no, it's 100% not going to be allowed.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's the difficulty that I see with that is I think that's the good thing about having each region have its own distributor, just because they can set the rules and then it doesn't affect other people. But
yeah, an Australian company can do what Australia wants.
Yeah. And so I think there's a positives to local distribution, but then there's the negatives. Like, yeah, like I said, Manga Up, where it's literally let's across the board block everything. And that's the difficulty that you end up facing is that you don't want that math. You don't want how much they're censoring things, obviously.
Yeah, it's and you know, the minute you censor it, you lose half of your audience anyway, because they go to pirate sites. I mean, it's, they might as well, I don't know, it's, they can't solve the problem perfectly for everybody, but very frustrating.
Now, that was the thing I was pointing out for a lot of people was that, or at least I was pointing out in my video, was that somebody in marketing or something made the decision that we're going to do this. And what that turned into being is that you lost literally everybody. You basically formed your app, your censorship to this one region, and thus everywhere else shut you down. And their whole point on Twitter is like, yeah, we're working on it. They didn't say they were going to uncensor things. They're just like, we're going to work on it. But it's still available elsewhere. Obviously, you can get Dress Up Darling somewhere else. I don't know, which maybe VizApp or something like that. Some other company is going to have Dress Up Darling, but just...
That's another good example. The publishing world is another good example of companies that don't really want to work with each other because, you know, Jump and Sunday and Magazine and Kodansha, I mean, they'll want to do their own thing. Yeah. And you even had that with when Newtype was around, Newtype USA, my beloved, I love it so much. It was so great. As an anime retailer, you put your ad in Newtype USA, every anime fan knows you. That's it. You're done. It was great. But anyway, Newtype USA had a thing where everything had to sort of be from Kadokawa. And it was like, hey guys, you can't completely only show Kadokawa stuff. So that's a thing that happens right now too. But it's like, just get along and you know, give us the anime we want. Don't waste our time.
I think you mentioned that before, that whole aspect of working along with other companies. Do you ever had companies where they know that you carry something and so they don't want to distribute through you?
Not really. Really, our brand name JAST or JAST USA was formed with our relationship with a company called JAST, which is no longer around. But then literally, like, we had to figure out what companies they were friendly with, and then we would work with their games. And these games over here, they didn't like JAST, so we had to and actually we made another brand called Peach Princess, which was just another brand that we made so that we could sell the games under a different company so that the Japanese people didn't think that we were selling them under JAST. So very, very silly stuff. That's why we had like different brands, or one of the reasons that there were a bunch of different brands back in the early days of hentai games.
That's crazy. Well, I don't have any other questions directly to you, but like I said, I did have some people that asked some questions on our Discord. Do you have more time? I know that you look like you were a little bit groggy. For those who don't know, he's like late night over there. We had to get up super early. We had Fourstick Man said on a note about visual novels. You have a company that still consist on using DRM on your games, or have you guys?
No,
you guys
all DRM is completely gone. Yeah, it's all gone. There was back when there was a company called G Collections, and we had a contract where we had to have DRM on certain of their titles. And when that contract ended, we actually had to crack our own games to get the DRM off, and then we're like, okay, DRM is done, sorry. So that was the last of that, and we don't have any DRM on any of our titles, so you don't have to worry about not being able to. And on the JAST USA, so basically everyone and his brother in digital publishing wants to be the Steam of X, the Steam of Y. So JAST USA, the website, is an all digital distribution platform for any type of hentai game. And so we've got all of our titles, obviously. We've got a whole bunch of third party titles, and basically all those titles are also DRM free. And if you ever buy a game, you own it forever. You don't have to worry about it not running. It doesn't check a server that might not be running or something like that.
I got to talk to you about a game that that's missing off of my
the JAST site. We can add it back on for you.
All right.
Just open a ticket to whatever the link at the ticket on the website is.
All right. So you already brought it up, so we can probably jump right into it. What's the situation with Steam? I'm assuming that none of your stuff for JAST is available on Steam, or do you have extensive versions that are?
We have like 7 or 8 games on Steam, and of course we have to do what everybody does. We have to censor them. So for example, take all the patches available. Out.
Yeah,
and we have the patch on their website. So if you want, Dramatical Murder, it's a really fantastic BL game. So we've got Dramatical Murder, the all ages version, and then you can come and get the patch from us for $4 or something like that.
Is that a frustrating thing to deal with Steam and how like some things are allowed but other things are not? I mean, we just got from the conversation with Sony.
The rules change and you never know it. And if they just say, "Hey, we decided that all school uniforms are NG," and it's like, school uniforms aren't porn. You know, unless they're having sex, it's not porn. Like, so we've had to jump through hoops. And so definitely the best way for visual novel fans to support companies that make visual novels is to buy directly from JAST USA if it's us, or Manga Gamer if you like the titles that they have, or whatever, Sekai Project or whoever. And definitely we won't play games with you. We'll give you the uncensored version. We'll give you the proper version. Steam is nice. We love having that available. You know, it's a great way to get games that people could never otherwise get. People like getting stuff to Steam.
Eyes on it.
There's so many games that are so good because they're adult. And then if we took the adult stuff out, there's a few games where we could make an all ages version, but it'll just be insulting to the customer and insulting to everybody. Yeah. So we just said,
so
never
mind.
So is
it something you guys actually create on your end? You make an all ages
version? Yeah, we do a Steam version and if we miss, we accidentally miss a nude scene, that's it. The game gets canceled and there's no way to get them to reconsider. So that's obviously financially devastating.
Yeah.
So we have to be very careful with that.
Because they'll actually take you off the platform, not just the game.
Well, just that game, not the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Or depending on how egregious the problem
is. If you keep doing it. Well, that's crazy. I think that was one of the things that I was kind of struggled with. But I do like the fact that you guys at least allow a patch or something that so people can
get the patch system. It seems to work out. And Steam just says, don't ever talk about the patch on your official page. And then I guess people do in the comments. One of the problems with Steam is that people will post nude screenshots. And we're like, guys, don't post nude screenshots. No, I'm not kidding. You really, please don't do that.
So they go get the patch and they come back and go, man, this scene was great.
Yeah,
and then Steam's what is on here? And they probably won't even take the time to look for themselves. They'll probably just assume that's something that you missed.
Yeah, and there's, sometimes they'll be cool, and sometimes they'll be very strict, and it's like, very frustrating.
Yeah. Now, when you're licensing games, is there certain things that you try to avoid? I mean, I probably things that are a little more overt, or is it just...
We just try to get what people want to play. Obviously, games that have that are famous, or like a game that's by a famous artist, like all the titles by Sei Shoujo, who did Bible Black, Discipline. He did a couple titles that we do. So that's obviously if everyone knows it, that's good. A lot of times people know it because a hentai anime exists of it, and then they'll come and get it, and then they'll realize that the visual novel is way, 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 way better because of course it is. It's a 20-hour wonderful first person POV sex with all these different girls across the story is a lot more interesting than watching a 20-minute very low quality hentai animation. So there's a game called Sweet Home, and I'm always evangelizing the game is really good and the anime is okay, it's interesting, but Sweet Home, you play it with headphones and you're basically living in your stepmom's house with 4 other girls and they all want to take your virginity. And it's just so interesting. And then when you're playing with headphones and you're like, I'm going to touch you here, just hear those voices, those wonderful voices in your ear. It's like, oh, man. So it's very fun.
I like how you described that. You're stuck in your stepmom's house with a bunch of women that want to take your virginity. It's really good. It's such a deep story. Very deep. Very deep. Well, that gets into the good question from Carbon Sodom. He said, what's your favorite eroge or visual novel?
Probably Yume Miru Kusuri, A Drug That Makes You Dream. That was just a really good title. In visual novels, there's, you know, certain like really famous writers who make really good stories. And one of them is named Romeo Tanaka. And he was involved. I mean, he wrote the whole story, but he was involved with Yume Miru Kusuri. So that's a really good one. Nitro Plus is a really amazing company that anyone who hasn't tried visual novels should experience.
I seem to be bumping into that one a lot. So I must be doing something right.
the most famous game is called Saya no Uta, and it was like it was written by Urobuchi Gen. So it's the game that got him on the map. And then of course he made all the including Madoka Magica. So it's you know what kind of story it is just because it's by him. It's very dark, but it's also really beautiful. It's very Cthulhu-esque if you like your loved craft.
Yeah, somebody mentioned that on Discord literally yesterday, said that they weren't wanting me to get to watch it.
He was trying to get me to watch it, and I'm like, no, that's an Andrew story because it's Jin Urobuchi. What are you trying to make me read? Because all I seen when I went to the Jazz page was, I'm not into that stuff.
So for anyone who doesn't know, so basically a guy gets hit by a car and then he sort of perceives the world after the accident. He perceives the world as instead of a room, he'll see like blood and guts and gore. And the reason is that he's been sort of half knocked into the Cthulhu universe. So he's viewing it as a Cthulhu monster would view our world. But then there's one beautiful girl whose name is Saya, and she comes up and she's like, oh, hi. And so he starts having a sexual relationship with her and he doesn't know why. She's the only one who is beautiful. And everyone else appears ugly and demonic. So it's just a very, very interesting story. It's really good because it's only like 5 hours. It's like the shortest game ever. And it has three endings, I think. So it's something you can play very casually. And we actually did an HD remaster, which is very important. We remastered all the graphics from the original sketches. Or we didn't. Nitro Plus did.
Now, King Aaron was bringing up a question. And I'm gonna expand on a little bit because I think this is one of the questions I was wanting to eventually ask you. And I already kind of know the answer probably. Since we have this divide of right stuff, you know, kicking out all these Arrow products, and like I mentioned earlier, that whole issue that I think a lot of people love that one-stop shop.
Sure.
What are the chances that J-List will open up a right stuff in the United States and go to Sentai Filmworks and all these companies and carry all their Blu-rays, all their products, and make essentially right stuff again, but with more
interesting
more
idea.
With more Arrow stuff than ever before.
We sort of like when we were back when we had our old office in San Diego and we had t-shirts, we had a lot of space, we could do all kinds of things. Now, unfortunately, our office is like half the size or our warehouse is half the size and it's filled with hentai doujinshi. So I don't think we'd have the room to switch up anything. You know, I'm pretty sure it would be like, there's no room to add anything. Interesting idea. One of the problems of hentai, one of the curses of hentai anime versus hentai games, fans love games and maybe they will pirate a game, but then they'll come back later and they'll generally buy it. So we love visual novel customers. They you know, very, very kind. They'll buy games from us or eventually they'll buy games. But I don't know, like hentai anime as a genre, does anybody buy it? I mean, no one bought it for the past 10 years, which is why there's no companies licensing it anymore. It's kind of a bummer. I'm really frustrated that there actually is a lot of demand for good quality. Like we sell a lot of stuff on J-List, the Japanese version, it doesn't have subtitles or anything like that, but there's a lot of demand, but like what model can we come up with to get like subtitles on these discs and get them out at a lower price so they can be sold to people all around the world? That would be really nice. Would Amazon allow that to be sold? Because once upon a time, Amazon was a great place to buy hentai, and now Amazon might be like, yeah, we can't sell that, and that would be the whole market for that.
They'll allow a listing until they figure it out. They just like add these listings, and eventually somebody says, you know, this is on your website, and they'll take it down. I guess the question is more on the idea, not just the Ero stuff, but more of the idea of everything in one place, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I think that was a thing that we mentioned when that buyout first happened, and you had this exodus of all the inappropriate stuff. The fear is, like you mentioned earlier, that stuff that's in the gray area. The stuff that's not necessarily hentai, but it's not clean either. It's the stuff that has side shots and stuff like that.
Odeimo is not porn, but it's sister fucking. So I mean, does anybody get we can't have this? I mean, if one thing is not allowed for some reason, it's only a matter of time until other things aren't. Unless you're
and that's the concern is that it's the Senrakagura effect. It's like they just keep moving that bar. And I think the fear that a lot of people have, and I think even including myself, is that that moment you do have right stuff starts kicking out anything that's etchy, anything that's borderline, kicking all that stuff out, and all you're left with is censored anime. And so I think they're, my opinion, I'm not a businessman or anything like that. My opinion is that this is the prime time for somebody to jump in and go, hey, we have everything. I mean, that's like I said, when I was, when we first heard about that and everybody was like, well, there's this other site they're making, but I don't know if I want to go there because I'm now I'm mad at this company. And it's obviously affiliated with that company because otherwise they wouldn't have their orders. My, our point was, J-List, well, go to J-List. You should have been going there anyway for that stuff. So it is an aspect of there is an open field now. There is an opportunity. And I wasn't sure if possibly J-List is thinking about that.
One of the reasons J-List has been around so long is that we know when to not, we know when to say no. So if there's something that's really cool, but like we go, you know, like t-shirts are great, but the cost of having the warehouse, you know, there's always that, you know, you have to do cost benefit analysis and what are the top three things we want to do? What are the top five things we want to do? And that's why we don't do, you know, so it's tricky. Of course, we being a Japanese company, I'm as far as you could get from that. But like our partners in San Diego, maybe. It's tricky.
It's really sad because
some of the things that on Amazon, like No Game No Life is canceled on Amazon because somebody objected to the you know, camel toe. And it's like, but that's not porn. It's, you know, so it's tricky when we start getting into the content and the relationships.
Well, we've talked many times about the idea of the risk reward aspect, and it is frustrating that void. There's a vacuum, and nature abhors vacuums. Somebody's going to fill it. In a lot of cases, we could only hope that a good company that we already know and we already trust would fill that void. And it is one of those things. I can understand that risk reward would definitely be very intimidating.
If anyone's watching this, one of the things that so I was always saying, like, why aren't there more anime retailers? Why aren't there more, you know, interesting companies doing interesting things? One of the growth areas, one of the few really good areas to, if you're ever like anyone wants to start a business at some point, consider anime conventions, make a small shop, appear at anime conventions, depending on where you are located. I'm assuming most people are in the US. We once calculated that the best place to base a business would be somewhere in Ohio, because within like 2 or 3 hours, you could get to New York, you get to Boston, you had this huge area with lots and lots of conventions to sell in. And that's an area where, you know, every convention sells out because conventions are great. And now that, you know, Corona's getting behind us, we can all go to conventions again. So that's something that if I were a young man, I would be like, hey, I could just be, you know, just do nothing but conventions. I love conventions. They're great. But being as far as I am from that, especially the Eastern Seaboard, it's real tricky. But anyway, anyone who's interested in starting an anime business, it is real tricky. Like, you can't just do it, and you have to have all kinds of extra knowledge. If you're gonna, you have to know what you're doing, you have to have passion, all that stuff. But an anime shop is something that has legs, and in Dallas, actually the Texas area is really another good area because there's a lot of conventions around there.
Yeah,
so just a sidebar.
Yeah, I think that's the difficulty is I understand, even before I ask the question, is the investment. It is always the investment. Yeah. And technically stocking a bunch of stuff and not sure if it's going to be selling, contacting Sentai Filmworks and stuff and saying, hey, give us a whole crap ton of Blu-rays so we can stock on the shelf and then start selling it. It is one thing that we don't really understand, the gradual move into something that people have built into. It's a difficult thing for new people to just jump into. That's like we always mention the idea of, well, we need another competitor to Crunchyroll. It's like, well, you do realize that setting up a bunch of servers to stream a bunch of video is going to be very difficult and very expensive. It's not. And then like YouTube, they want competitors to YouTube, and nobody wants to support the ones that pop up. So it's risk reward investment is always a huge thing in the whole.
And then we all have to follow YouTube's rules, which got to be really frustrating for you.
Yes, it's very, very frustrating.
Yeah.
Meet us. I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer this one, but Do you guys have a tag system on JList for looking up doujinshi and stuff? Like, not depending on what really. Kind of content's in it? Like,
our new site will be better. Huh? So basically, our current site is running on a shop that is is end of life. So we're like quickly working on our next site. It's something we'll probably have in our next site. We're very hard.
Just make it through these next few days.
It would be nice to have a completely tag based JList where you just say, "I want this," and here you go. And yeah, that would be great.
So I guess the way they can ask it is, do you guys keep track of like search terms and stuff like that? Do you have like a common search term for doujinshis?
Basically, everything is searchable, and then if the like we make categories, like a show is popular, so we make a category like Fate. And we put everything in the Fate category. It doesn't make itself, which is very logical, and it should be, because then when a new show comes along, like My Dress Up Darling, we have to make a category for My Dress Up Darling, make sure all the products are tagged so that they'll go in the category, rebuild the category. You know, it's very laborious. So
I bet definitely that was very popular at the time.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
So you guys obviously.
Doujins come out right away. Like, the figures take a long time to come, but doujins are like, yeah, we got some doujins.
Yeah. You got to jump on that boat. I think that's probably one of the more interesting things you probably deal with, is that aspect of the each season a show comes out, and obviously whatever characters in that thing just starts taking off. Yeah. And you start getting a whole bunch of stuff regarding that.
And that defines what type of sexy stuff you'll see on the JList Twitter, whatever is popular this year or this season. And then some stuff will be just like, there's really nothing popular. What do I do? And like sometimes it doesn't fly, or a show is good but isn't really like hitting home with customers or with fans, so it's a bummer.
Yeah, that was I think that probably is the thing that I've faced a couple times, where you have certain seasons where it just seems like there's that certain genre, that certain type of show is completely drought of it. Not enough ecchi stuff out there, or not enough. You don't have your waifu of the season, like, you know, Marin from Dress Up Darling. Right now, we technically have great. Like the Licorice Girls. We have Vermil, and then Susmaid, I guess, is the one that everybody calls her. Susmaid recently, the maid I hired recently is unusual. I haven't seen any of that on your feed. Am I just missing it?
We've got a bunch of different bloggers on our site, and one of the other bloggers is doing that show, so I'm actually watching it because he's covering it. So I'll just repeat stuff that he's doing, but I haven't gotten into that show yet. There's too much anime to watch, as you guys can probably guess.
you're watching the most important one. And that's the Labyrinth Harem, right? Roxanne?
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Okay, good. As long as you're covering Roxanne.
Not the one with the error messages, hopefully. Not the one with the error messages, obviously. Well, that's great. No, I think for recently, the maid I hired recently is Mysterious. It's just stick with the doujinshi, stick with the original manga. That's where all the good art is. That show has got some good art. Fan art for that show is really good.
It's so funny, because literally whenever I start a new show, I'll go out on Downvoter or Pixiv, and I'll just like, show me how much fan art exists. And if it's 2 pages, I'll be like, okay, we've got a problem. And if it's 100 pages, oh, wow, this is... I know I'm in for something interesting.
To be fair, Roxanne just hasn't gotten her just love yet. You know, once she gets some love, everybody's going to be all over that. Yeah. You know it. You know that, right?
Because it's a harem, but then the harem is going to take... When is the rest of the girls going to show up like?
Well, Sherry's coming soon. I promise.
Yeah.
Sherry is a dwarf, but we love Sherry because she's the tsundere of a group. So
then
you get the cat girl, and then the lizard girl, or the dragon girl, and then the elf girl. Then, but yeah, that's going to take forever. But it's okay, because we got Roxanne still.
Yeah.
You're talking me down. Come on now.
I was in the same
boat. It's a slow grind.
I was in the same boat. By the time we got to this recent episode, I'm like, where's the harem part of the harem in 11th in Another World?
I've been trying to tell everybody, when it comes down to it, it's a slice of life. It's not a grand quest. It's not, big bad. It's a slice of life. It just so happens to be a harem in Another World. It's a slice of life. Slice of lives are slow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's... Sorry.
Anyway, so are we good? Shall we wrap it up?
Yeah, that's all I have available for you, but it was a good discussion. Yeah, I definitely appreciate you coming on here. Like I said,
I appreciate the invite. So when you need to get a hold of me, just at me in a tweet and I'll be like, oh, okay. I need to check my DM. Sorry.
That's all you got to do. Not everybody else. Don't bug him. Everybody's like, yeah, me too. Can I like, call you up?
So if people who don't know my Twitter, what I do is I'll say like, you know, Hey guys, share your favorite X and like, what are your favorite anime else? And everyone will just give me their anime else and I'll pick the best 10 or 15 and I'll do a blog post about that. So it's just fun. And then I'll research the history of elves in anime. I'll go out and find some data and, you know, what are the first, did it come through Tolkien? Did it come through the AD&D craze that was happening in the 1970s? And, it's just kind of funny, like to investigate the background of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the coolest thing about getting a hold of you finally is basically having somebody that has that insight into the industry in itself. And so whenever I do have questions like, you know, how does the Japanese audience really view, or at least what you hear people talking about a certain subject, I think it'd be interesting to kind of poke you and get that information out of you if possible. Not that you have to do a big, huge, crazy research of it, but I will have to tell people I'm a little bit disenchanted in the idea that when we first got on here with you, you were setting up your scheduled tweets. And was telling everybody, I was telling everybody that this is a person that just sits there all day and memes Twitter all day. And now it's all been shattered because now I know that he just schedules it. So he's not actually there.
I have a scheduling tool and I do the same for Facebook. I mean, I have to have a life. I sleep sometimes. Although people don't know that. Now you know my secret.
No, that's the problem is now you've shattered that expectation that you now have a life and you're not just a no-lifing Twitter with memes.
I go to the gym, I eat dinner, you know.
You gotta still keep things together. So that's fine. But no, I definitely appreciate you taking time to get on here so late at night and getting this done finally. It was a lot of fun. Hopefully next time Sony and Crunchyroll does something crazy, we'll have to get you back on here. But no, I'll put links to everything for JList, okay. JBox, your Twitter feed, all that kind of stuff. Is there anything else you don't want to push, Jast?
Maybe the blog. I don't know. We do. So basically, the JList blog has been around since 1998. I've written all the posts, and then like 5 or 6 years ago, we started having a bunch of different writers. So people will write on different topics, or they'll cover different anime, and I'll write about the top 15 ecchi scenes of the past. Of the past season, things like that, just whatever's so fun.
You make the important post then.
Yeah. I want to keep it fun.
But yeah, again, thank you so much for coming on here. If you guys want to find him, we'll have all the links available. And we appreciate everybody else for checking out this video and hope you guys enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to all of our banter, everyone who listened. Thank you and or watched.
Old people talk about anime.
Yeah, I know. Let me tell you, back when I was watching Yamato.
Y'all take care.
Oh, all right. Take care. Bye-bye.
And that concludes the interview. I hope you guys all enjoyed this interview. Once again, I want to thank Peter Payne with JList for giving up his time to have this interview. I'd also like to remind everybody that JList for a limited time is offering up our listeners an exclusive coupon. That's JList Spirit 20, which you can use at JList.com to get $20 off your order of $50 or more. Again, I'd like to remind people that this site is a not safe for work website with adult content on it, but I definitely welcome people to go there, check them out, and use the coupon code if you find anything interesting to you. As a bonus, we have an extra snippet of audio from before the podcast began. I hope that you all enjoy it and that you enjoyed this podcast episode. It is through you guys' support that makes this happen. All those that support us on Patreon, everybody that shares our content, letting other people know about us, we greatly appreciate your support. And with that said, you all take care.
So I just had some of our products set up here just for fun.
Yeah, I was. You were like, I'm going to show up on a hold and stuff. I don't know what YouTube's going
to
be okay.
Let me know if you want me to move this. I made sure to hide everything that was considered nudity. So I don't know if YouTube is like super strict on that.
I don't want to press those buttons with YouTube.
Yeah, it's literally a foot. The whole thing is a foot.
I seen that once on your Twitter feed. I'm like, okay, there's something for everybody, right?
I had I have scripts running all the time to like remind me to check this, and it brings up the browser.
You're a busy man.
Yeah,
I don't blame you for missing my messages now.
Yeah, apologies.
Yeah, we're
so really the best way if I'm not noticing is like you said, check your chats. Like I had checked the DM and then I saw you had in the actual Twitter feed, you're like, hey, Peter, check your DMs. Oh, yeah, sorry.
I was so hoping that you wouldn't think that I was being mean about that. I was like, just stop posting lewds and get this thing going. Yeah. I'm like, I can't get a response out of him, but I'm seeing all this. But that makes sense if you have him scheduled. So
don't stop him from doing the lewds. Come on now.
Everybody's replying going, shut up. I want the lewds.
My goal is to tweet until I get to the point where people say, all right, Pete, you need to stop. And it's like, no one's ever told me that. I'm literally, if I tweet too much and people don't reply, I know that I'm doing something different. But it's all about what do people like, what do people reply to, what do people react to. And if it's good, I'll do more of that. And if it's not, okay, that wasn't good, I'll do something else.
I thought about doing that just to keep my feed going. Typically, all my feed is just me posting about a video I posted or something. So eventually, that's I need to do something like that.
And we all know how busy I am. Seeing as how y'all, you just dumped me because I didn't post enough. I'm assuming. Well, I have no idea why you stopped talking to me.
Unfollowed? You got unfollowed?
Yeah, I got unfollowed. Jeez. I'm assuming because he thought that I was not active enough.
Was it me?
I don't know. You never told me
that's
why.
That's probably a pro. Well, I've got 40,000 followers or people that I follow. So basically, there's a tool called Tweepy that I use to clean out my Twitter. And mainly it says, we recommend that you unfollow these people. And mostly it's things like someone who didn't tweet in 3 months, then I unfollow. Someone who like only follows and never interacts because they're just like a bot. They think it's a bot or whatever. So it's things like that. It's not, I'm never going. I mean, literally, I have so many people that I follow. I'm not actually going out and going, hey, let's check out that guy's feed. It's like, you know, I'm not
offended by it. It's okay. I understand how a lot of that stuff works.
Yeah. I basically, like, in order to do all the stuff that I need to do with JList, and, you know, like, we have a small number of employees now, so I have to be very efficient, and I do, this is my blogging time, this is my, you know, then I exercise in between blogging time, because you have to exercise or you'll die. Then I have my, you know, Twitter time. And as I'm doing Twitter, I've got it set up where I'm using two different computers because I'm finishing up a game translation. And while one of the computers is scheduling a tweet and it's copying the file over and it's setting it all up, I've got like 4 or 5 seconds where I can do one of the translations of one line of my translation. I'll always be moving forward on that. And so that's just how I live my life, where I'm always like, how can I optimize everything?
I can't work a little bit quicker.
Yeah. And, you know, I play video games. I do, you know, I relax and I watch, you know, Netflix and things like that. But I want to make sure that if I'm going to be working, I'm, you know, if there's a script that takes, you know, 30 seconds to do something, I want to say, well, how can I make it take 5 seconds? And I can, over the period of a day or a week or month, that's like quite an actually good, you know.
So you're not watching Licklish the Coil then?
I watched it and then I realized the thing is, I was so busy in the beginning of the season. Usually the beginning of the season is when I start. I say, okay, I'm going to introduce this like within the first couple episodes. And once it's up to episode 8, I'm like, oh crap, I can't admit to everybody I wasn't watching it properly. And I watched, you know, like 5 episodes. But at that point, it's like,
I'll just wait for the new season to
start. Yeah, I always have to hide.
Hey, that's 10 what? Times worse for us. We are never behind. We are never, we're on top of every show. We're actually ahead on, and we know what's coming up on everything.
I sometimes have to write about something I haven't properly watched and pretend, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so if I get it wrong and people go, you know, you got that wrong. I'm like, ooh, poser. Crap. So, or if I like, I don't know what this source is. Like, I really look hard to get the right source, because if I say, I don't know what this source is, and it's like, you don't know that it's the 1977 classic. Like, I don't know every fucking thing, man. Jesus.
Oh, everyone just God, I feel you. I feel you mispronounce something, and it's just the end of the world. I got in trouble for Maiden Abyss as a character called Irumui, and I kept saying Irumui, and I got, flamed for it here recently. So
that's a show I'm not... caught up with it, because I'm still trying to get caught up with it. I really want to write.
I don't know if I feel bad for you. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, I know I'm just starting the season, so I'll catch up real quickly.
I just cheat and say red hair girl and the blonde hair girl, and then everybody's gotten used to me doing that all the time, so it's easier for me.
That's your brand.
Well, we're ready to go if you want to get started. That way we can get some of this actually going. Okay. So I'll just do a quick introduction. I'll introduce you, and then we'll get into all the questions and everything, and you could just kind of flow from there.